Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself.
We spent some time on the phone with the first Latino ever elected to the Boston City Council, Felix Arroyo. The council's strongest environmental advocate, Felix touches on his early beginnings in Puerto Rico, his biking there and here, and his longtime reliance on both walking and public transportation.
So how are you doing today, Felix?
Pretty good. No change in my health so far. So I feel good.
So far?
Yes.
Okay.
You never know what the future brings to you, huh?
Okay. All right. Well, as the first ever Latino on the Boston City Council, you graduated from the University of Puerto Rico. Is that where you grew up?
I grew up in Puerto Rico. Actually, I grew up in a town called Arecibo at the north coast of the island in a public project, throwing rocks and sometimes baseballs.
What'd you throw the rocks at?
Well, let me tell you, it was not pretty when we have some fights among each other.
Oh, no. Okay. So is Puerto Rico like Cuba in the sense that it's bike-friendly there? A lot of bicycles?
Yes, it is bike-friendly, and we love to bike. It's actually my first sense of freedom was when I got, as a present, a bike when I was around 10 or 11 years old. My knees didn't feel the same way because I fall, but and I have a little problem. But it gave me a strong sense of freedom. That was my first realization that my parents allowed me to have a vehicle in my hands and go wherever I wanted. And I said to myself, "Wow, this is an amazing feeling," you know.
Wow. Now, you left there, I guess, to continue your education at MIT and Harvard. I guess probably you were, early 20s when you made that move to the United States?
No, actually, I was older than that. I was in my 30s. I was a teacher already in Puerto Rico, and I already have a master's degree. I came to do post-secondary studies at Harvard, and then continue with a public planning program at MIT. But I was already a teacher in Puerto Rico when I came, and that's a long story, though, why I came and that kind of thing. Maybe when you have a couple of hours, we can talk about it. But it had to do with the fact that many Latinos were Puerto Ricans were returning to the island, and as a teacher, I saw the clash of culture among Puerto Ricans, and I wanted to really understand what was going on and realize that half Puerto Ricans were in the island, half over here, and I wanted to continue to be a good teacher. I needed to understand my own community, you know, so that's why I chose to come here. That's the short version of it.
Okay. Well, while you were teaching in your, sounds like your 20s, did you ride a bike to work?
Actually, I had a bike, but I work exactly. I ride a bike from Peabody Terrace in Cambridge, which is where I live with my at that time my daughter of 1 year and my wife, to Harvard Graduate School of Education every day, even in winter. I remember my daughter all bundled up in the in the back seat of the bike.
Great.
And that was really a good experience for me. I distrusted public transportation at that point, and I was not ready to use a car here. So that was the time that I was at Harvard, I used a bike. And then when I moved to Boston, I was working in an adult learning center in the South End in an area called Villa Victoria. And the adult learning center was literally 3 minutes from my home.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't even have to use a bike. I used the first mean of transportation known to man, my own legs.
Okay. Now, I guess what I was trying to ask was, in addition to your bike riding there in Boston to go to the Boston schools, did you, when you taught in Puerto Rico, did you ride your bike to work then?
I used public transportation then, and
Okay.
for a while I did have a little Volkswagen, the old-fashioned one. But unfortunately, that was one of those old ones, and I had to push it many times, so I stopped using it and went in public transportation.
Okay. Now,
because it was not that close to my home when I work in the metropolitan area as a teacher. So it was not easy.
Okay, so
to do
that. You stayed in Boston, and then
yes.
you taught, and you at what level did you teach? Was it college level classes?
Middle school.
Middle school. Okay.
Yes.
So 6, 7, and 8, or no, 7, 8, and 9?
7, 8, and 9.
Got
Great.
It. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So you taught. You also served as director of Advocacy of Hope, which was the Hispanic Office of Planning and Evaluation.
You are doing a quantum leap in many other jobs before that.
Okay.
Yes, that was my last job before I become a member of the council.
Okay. I also understand you're a preacher.
Yes, when they let me do it.
Okay.
I'm a member of the UCC, United Church of Christ, and for a while I was an interim minister over there. But I left that because I believe my mission was mainly in education. That's why I entered the education system. And then actually I feel that there is so many issues of equity and respect for human beings that I find a niche on politics of all places to fight for those kind of things. And you mentioned any issue from education to housing to environmental issues, we still are far from equity and far from a full respect both for human being and the environment.
Wow. Well, thanks for knowing that. Okay. Now
well, I feel blessed that I can do that.
Okay. Now, in 2003, you carried more Boston's wards than any other candidate. Does that mean you were the top vote getter?
Actually, not really, because some of the wards that were in other districts voted more than the ones that I won. I won all the areas that are poor or people of color or progressive, to be honest. Those are the areas that I won. The areas of Boston, like West Roxbury, Charlestown, South Boston, I couldn't win. And many of them vote even more than people in the poor areas. But we're taking care of that as well.
Okay, now being the guy who won the most wards, does that carry any weight for you on the council?
Well, it carries weight with the constituencies and the kind of agenda that I present. Of course, each one of us is elected independent of each other, and people are elected here also based on what they believe. And therefore, I will say the council reflects ideologies as well and reflect the new Boston as well as the old Boston. And that has to be that way anyway. In a way, I believe the new Boston that people refer to is really an inclusive one, one in which everybody counts the same way, and I'm proud to be a part of that.
Okay, so the new Boston, for a lot of people out in my audience that are located all across the United States, is probably a Boston that when I look at the studies I've done and the research I've done about your city, it's no longer a white city. It's a majority-minority city. Does that mean it's not the blue bloods don't run your metropolis as much like they used to?
Well, it's a majority-minority city in terms of numbers. It continues to be a majority of white voters, and particularly of elder voters. And so we still have not transformed that majority of color into a force in the political arena that we can say is the majority. And so that could be a little misleading for the national audience if they think that we have that we have passed the barrier in terms of minorities or, as we prefer to say, people of color, being the majority in the political arena. We are the majority numerically, but in terms of the political arena, it continues to be the traditional vote, mainly elderly vote, which in most of the places vote more regularly, almost we'll say religiously, than other groups. But as you know, and probably most of our people in the national level understand, there is a strong conscious building about people who are immigrants to vote, that have the citizens to register and vote. And it's a process that we have seen here in Boston as well, where we can see every election year more people that previously did not participate, understanding that democracy don't happen by chance, that you need to be a part of it.
Wow. Okay. Well, you also, you're a biodiesel guy. Tell us about your biodiesel car.
Well, I have a car that is run in Greece, actually. It's not biodiesel. It's a transformation. You can attach it by a system of hoses and a tank and that kind of thing. You can have it unfiltered. You can have a separate tank within a diesel car on top of your diesel tank that, in addition to your diesel tank, that only have grease. And you may say, what kind of grease? Any grease from any restaurant, as long as you filter it, will provide the fuel for the car. Not only will provide the fuel, but it's zero contaminants. So what you have in biodiesel will be the central tank, because you can use a regular engine in biodiesel and in grease. And so the central tank you use to ignite the car, to begin the, to start the car, and then after that, when the car is hot enough in the winter time, then you can switch to direct grease. And then the car is running in grease. And this is something that most restaurants are willing to give away because they have to pay for it to be taken away from their restaurants. And so we have companies here, a couple of young entrepreneurs that are very conscious of how we are disrespecting our environment that collect the grease. But lately, I even have stopped driving and using public transportation directly to my office because it's easier. And I walk also. I like to go back and keep using my original mean of transportation because I think it's healthy, you know. And as you get old, you realize that walking is a good thing to do. So why not making it practical too and use it to get places? As an elected member of the council, I found another very interesting situation with this. When I walk around the streets or go out for a walk, people see me and say, "Hey, Felix, you remember me?" And or "I like what you're doing," or "I don't like what you're doing. Let me tell you a piece of my mind." And you hear, you hear the people and understand where they are coming from, so you feel connected. And when you get in the train, when people don't recognize you, at least you can read and listen to music. Try that driving. You will not be able to.
Right.
And so right now, during the spring and the summer, yes, I plan to do some biking as well because it's so beautiful out that you really will lose if you don't do something like that.
Thanks for knowing that. That's very – so you still ride then? You still get out and roll around a little bit?
Of course.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, now I know when Katrina hit, a lot was made about the fact that Mayor Menino got out of his Ford Expedition and opted for a smaller car, as well as adding some of the
services. I applaud that. I mean, you know, that was great
right,
for
right.
me.
As well as adding biodiesel to the city fleet. What about bikes?
Yeah, that was my that was my resolution in the council.
Great. Now, what about bicycles? Where did, what part did they play in that? Why was that not a part of the conversation?
There was even in his administration, he appointed the first person to deal with bicycle issues. In the city. I think he was the first mayor to ever do that. I'm not so sure, and I have to be honest with you, I have to double check that after the person left, if they put another person to do that job. But the budget is here, and I will ask that question, because that's one of our main roles in the city council, to approve and review the budget submitted for the city of Boston. Want to make sure that that position is there a position to look into how do we make the city more bike friendly
and
facilitate the process?
A bike coordinator. So essentially,
exactly. That I have to recognize that Menino was the first mayor to appoint a person for that position and created that position.
in
the transportation division. But I believe that after the person left, it was not Phil again.
Might that person have been Paul Shimmick?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so he left and the position just wasn't filled. Is that what, that's what you're telling me?
That's what I think, and I will find that out, because when the transportation department come, I'm going to ask that question, because that was a good thing.
Okay, now, so you're telling me that that basically the money is there for that position?
It's just... At least the position existed, and if the money's not there, I want to know why it has not been allocated. That's not so much money in a city that has a budget of $2 billion to have in order to be able to coordinate something so important as our transportation means for the future.
Yeah,
because I have a strong hope that we could stop, as the president say, our addiction to gas.
Thank you. Thank you. Wow. So what is your office doing to make it easier for Boston cyclists?
Well, we want to do anything that the constituency feel will facilitate that. We study the process that is going in Cambridge, which is very much friendly to bikes, and we found some contradictory opinions from people. We are going to ask people who are interested in giving us the opinion of what can we do in the city of Boston to access our website, which is felixarroyo.net. That's spelled felixarroyo.net or .com, and give us your 2 cents, because when we saw the special line that is done in most in several streets down in Cambridge, which is our neighbor city, for bikes exclusively, some people felt that that was dangerous to them, more dangerous than to allow them to be part of the traffic, because they said that cars don't respect that, and when they park, if a bike is going through that particular line, people open their doors all of the sudden, and several accidents have happened that way. And I don't know, I need to hear from the people who know the most, which is those who every day use a bike on the street, either as part of their work, or simply because they are very conscious of the need to maintain our earth happy.
Okay, I'm going to...
And therefore, I want them to write to me. If you go to that website, again, it's felixarroyo.com, there will be an email aspect to it, and you can write to me just about that. Actually, you can subscribe to a weekly newsletter, which is interactive, so that I can have a dialogue with people regarding this and other issues. I am very conscious of the issues of the environment, and I like to say that I have been dealing with them, not just in terms of the cars. Actually, we have in the council already for a hearing the use of biodiesel for the heat system. And actually, I learned through some of my friends that connect to me that you can actually use the same process that I use for the car. Use strict grease in some, not in every system, so people cannot just go and try this, in some of the heating systems. Huh. And there is a professional way to do that, so just don't clog your system by listening to me at this stage.
okay.
But we are putting one for the city in regard to that. The other one that we're very concerned about is there is a big asthma average here in the city of Boston and in many urban areas due to fuels, fumes from fuel. So the school buses is our next step on this. And actually, the person who's my campaign manager when I run transformed a school bus to grease. So we can do this too. It is a possible way to substitute the direct dependency on gas. But again, to answer your question, yes, we're looking at this. We're very concerned about that. That's why I would like to see again a coordinator, because one of the things I want to be careful with is not to do things without understanding from those who are affected what effect these have on them.
Great.
And so one of the things that I applaud at all is this this commitment to do the Boston to San Francisco path. And beside the major encouraging and citation, I'm going to do one for the council. And I'll be there to present it to them,
Great.
Make sure that the Bicycle Greenway Day is a great celebration, and that we can send our friends to San Francisco with a good goodbye.
Great. Well, we've reached that point in the interview where we've pretty much got to wrap up. Anything you'd like to add for my bicycle listeners from all over the United States?
Again, our phone over here is 617-635-3115. Let me repeat it. 617-635-3115. And our website is felixarroyo.com. And we welcome all input that our friends could give us in terms of what is the best way to approach this issue through the series. In the meantime, keep biking.
All right. Wow. Well, it's been an honor getting the chance to talk with you, Felix. It really has been. So I just
thank you. I enjoyed it too.
So thanks for the time you took for us today. And our NBG Scouts will be meeting you on Friday at noon at City
See
Hall.
See you there.
All right. Thanks, Felix.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more info about the NBG, go to nationalbicyclegreenway.com. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.